All right, it's an emergency pod. The folks want to hear. They want to hear, Mike, what's going on? Because is the world melting down?
I don't know. It kind of is, but I also don't think so.
Okay. Background, of course, is we're talking about these Trump tariffs that are set to go into effect in 2 days.
Yeah, in 2 days, and I think they will go into effect.
Okay.
And obviously the stock market and I would say the bond market, but bond market hasn't really been doing much. I mean, it's been like erasing and rebuilding the yields for like 2 or 3 days. You probably noticed it's basically gone nowhere.
It's gone nowhere, but stocks didn't go anywhere today either.
They didn't go anywhere today, but they're down, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25% on the indexes.
Over the past couple weeks, right?
Since
year-to-date's like, pretty bad, too.
Yeah, year-to-date is down like 10% or something. Yeah. But all the Asian and European indexes crashed over the weekend, i.e. Monday morning, mm-hmm. local time.
I didn't check my Chinese stocks, but I'm guessing they got decimated.
Yeah, they're all fucked.
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm in it. Yeah.
So I've been trying to decipher like what the fuck is going on here? Like what the administration is obviously pro business, right? Like they didn't get hijacked by aliens in the last 4 years or 4 months since they left their jobs or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, okay, so what's actually happening here? And dude, the crazy thing is, if you just listen to what they say during interviews and press conferences,
yeah.
they're literally just doing everything they said that they were going to do, right?
Yeah.
And that's not like people have been coming to that realization for the last 2 or 3 months. Like, oh wait, they're actually just doing what
they're actually going to do it.
Yeah, they're actually going to do it. And, mm-hmm. I think that's part of the big shock because, you know, there's this whole trope about, you know, take Trump seriously, but not literally. But now it's like seriously and literally, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I think just last time he was able to push through a lot of stuff, but not nearly as much stuff as he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, 2016 was 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was 10 fucking years ago, right? 9.5 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
When he got elected, it was definitely 10. When he started campaigning, over 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, and also when you look at his, look at these crazy videos from the 80s of Donald Trump.
I think we're at 9 years.
Yeah, a decade, basically.
Yeah, a decade.
Give or take. Mm-hmm. By summer or whatever it'll be. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so if you look at these videos that made their way onto YouTube about Donald Trump, he's been saying the same shit for 40 fucking years.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. He's been like, saying it on the Phil Donahue show.
Yeah.
About Japan and all that stuff, yeah.
Right. So that I think that's common knowledge at this point, but just for some background. Anyway, so I think he's really serious, man. I think my personal interpretation of what they're doing is from what I can gather, and I've been looking at some other analysis and reading some stuff, from what I can gather, they think that America has basically been colonizing itself for the past, and I've never heard it put in these terms.
Did you hear someone say that, or this is what you're thinking?
No, I was just reading this shit all day all weekend today,
yeah.
Watching my fucking portfolio go up and down, and I'm just like, what the hell is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what you could interpret the meta situation is that the U.S. has been colonizing itself,
yeah,
for the past, you know, I don't know, maybe since Nixon 71, like the Nixon mm-hmm. shock or whatever, right?
Yeah. I would probably put it closer to Clinton.
Okay, yeah, like NAFTA, right?
Like 92, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but basically the concept is usually a colonial power is a centralized force that controls the capital flows around the world to their colonies. But at the same time, they're competing with all the other colonial powers that are also doing the same thing. And then you get like this weird mercantilistic back and forth, right? Like that's mm-hmm. the classic colonial model.
Mm-hmm.
But since the World War II era has been so centralized in America,
mm-hmm.
and because there's a global reserve currency at the scale of which has never really been achieved before.
Yeah.
The British pound had nothing. The Portuguese, all these, even like colonial, you know, the fucking Mongols and the Romans, like all, like you go way back, the scale is completely unmatched.
The scale was unmatched, and even the British pound at its height was still gold-backed. So yeah. It wasn't exactly the same thing.
Yes, so the currency is backed by nothing mm-hmm. except for force.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is the colonial borders are bleeding into each other, and the managerial classes of the colonial powers are bleeding into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I don't think anyone would give a shit if it were just like Cambodia and Africa or whatever, like from 100 years ago. But now you have multiple superpowers that are intertwined in this colonial system only because of the U.S. reserve currency status and the fact that all of the capital flows just somehow end up in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like all of the debt that's issued, all of that money, all of the trade capital flows end up in American capital markets and make Americans the richest class of the colonial system. I don't even know if it's neo-colonial. This is like supra-colonial. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think it's true that it's making a certain set of Americans rich.
That's what I'm saying. Well, here's the problem.
But it's also making a lot of foreigners rich.
Exactly. Here's the problem.
It's their capital.
Here's the problem.
Mm.
Hundreds of millions of Americans are living like colonial subjects.
Yes.
While obviously the rulers of America get rich. But then also people in other countries are getting rich. Other sovereigns are getting rich.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
The deal is supposed to be
everyone in the colonial center gets rich somehow or another.
Think the MAGA, the sort of like MAGA dipshit that's going off on these like wild theories about the globalists. It's not totally wrong.
It's not untrue.
I think they get some of the specifics around how it happens and why wrong, and then they can go on very sometimes dangerous, you know, sort of
tangents
and anti-Semitic tropes and all this stuff. But
no, yeah, it's all part of the same system.
But I understand. You know, I think there is an underlying reality to what they're seeing. Now, they may not have the tools, I think, to put it all together, but the idea that there is a globalist class which is supranational in character, meaning that it doesn't have a real loyalty to the United States.
Yes.
Or any other country. It is really about a global class of
yes.
capitalists. Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the real problem is this doesn't become an actual issue in America, the head of the dragon, so to speak, until a critical mass of people start feeling disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And I think in the last 10 years, 10 to 15, 20 years around there, that really started reaching its fever pitch, right? Like the colonial center is not supposed to. You're supposed to have like, and this is a real cynical interpretation, but the colonial center is supposed to have like servants and people from the colonizer are supposed to live at an elevated status.
Yeah, and, like the Emiratis.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like this latest this latest immigration push from the Democrats was like an attempt to not restore, but achieve that kind of balance where there's like a almost like a servant class that's supposed to serve in the service economy of the super colonial system.
Hispanic immigrants.
Yes. They're supposed to be that class, except obviously when you bring in that many people, it never fucking works that way.
Yeah. Under our system, because our system is a democratic system. And we have guaranteed rights, and we're not a monarchy where we could just spell it out. Like,
they're not
here temporarily. You're an indentured servant. You have no rights, and when you're done, you get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that entire construct just went haywire in the last 10 years, right? Yeah, the whole thing just started going crazy.
Yeah,
especially with like the ultra concentration of wealth. Like, dude, billionaires are worth. I think Elon Musk.
They're closer to state wealth than they are personal.
Yeah,
wealth.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wrote this whole. Probably won't be able to see this on the pod, but I wrote this whole like. I did this entire diagram, and basically it's like a circular diagram because this is an end to end graph, right, of all these colonial systems, with like a huge center node. Being the USA. But like this one-to-one example was basically like all of the financial managerial class, corporate management, C-suite, shareholder, ultra high net worth, basically shareholder class. And then like there's this middle class and there's capital flows and debt and like goods flowing and land ownership. Anyways, the point is, and then the foreign sovereigns with massive FDI, massive labor, massive raw materials, basically the poor people. From foreign lands who are supposed to like, you know, achieve this capitalist dream. But the problem is this entire middle class of the US, I mean, this isn't new information. I just like kind of drew it out onto a thing to help me understand it better, like visually. But this greater middle class, which includes a professional class, entrepreneurial class, upper middle class, lower middle class, and working class / poor have been getting squeezed in three different directions. Four, if you count sovereign debt. So they've been asked to work harder, constantly work harder, right? Inflation on the land and inflation on the goods. So the thing that your system is supposed to provide for you, which is you work and you get stuff, that's completely flipped. It's just completely flipped in the last 20 years. So so basically
inflation on the goods is pretty recent. I feel like something that changed a lot in the past. Yeah, but
goods and services as in education, medical, blah, blah, blah. Like,
but even consumer goods, I feel like were flat for a while until fairly recently.
Yeah.
And now we have inflation in goods, that's really destabilizing.
That was the release valve. When food and... like other like day-to-day stuff goes up.
Yeah.
That really puts into perspective the education and the medical and the childcare and all that stuff. Cause that stuff has been going up for a long time.
That's been going up. Yeah. And then ask that like a lot of inflation, I think Peter Schiff was making this observation that our system, the dollar system, and the way in which we run these structural trade deficit, which is necessary. And even Krugman, you know, someone like Krugman is now saying the same thing, saying, look, trade deficits are not even there. It's not that they're not even bad. It's that they're necessary in order for the world to earn enough U.S. dollars to participate in a U.S. dollar financial system. How else are they going to earn dollars? Right. So the more and more, even like, you know, orthodox economists like Krugman are coming around to the idea that there is such a thing as U.S. dollar hegemony. It does offer us a way to export inflation. And that inflation, because we run these trade deficits, we're not making up for imported goods with exported goods. We're making up for imported goods with exported assets. In the form of those dollars being invested into into U.S. financial assets, like
which makes the elites even richer.
Makes the elites even richer, but the inflation at the time, in the way it was shielding regular people from consumer inflation, because
it's invisible.
Because we were getting inflation on things like stock prices and real estate, right? So
yeah.
So those assets, so the inflation was being directed away from goods and into financial assets and real estate. And I think for the most part, a lot of Americans took that to be a sign of really good things, because it's like, well, you know, food is cheap, consumer goods are cheap, and the economy must be doing well because land prices are, like, real estate prices are going up and the stock market's through the roof. And I think now we're starting to realize, now that, like you said, like, we're getting the consumer inflation is back.
Well, not just that. So land, as long as it's going up, is generally a good thing until the debt levels preclude you from getting a cheap mortgage so that you can actually move. So even if you own a house, it becomes a prison, kind of, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if you game it out, the only people who really gain, like, in a real way from real estate appreciation in terms of residential real estate are, like, retirees who are, like, you know, raised a family in a big house and now it's time for them to downgrade.
Yeah, like my parents.
Yeah, but everyone else is on the elevator up. So it's like your home, your starter home is going up, but your dream home has gone up 1.5 or 2 times faster. So, you know, it's not really helping anyone.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And even at this point, the commercial real estate is frozen in place, right? Commercial real estate, whether it's multifamily or office, I mean, we talked about this in the last one, but it's all gelling in my mind a little bit more, you know, a couple weeks later. A lot of people are getting screwed. And you know what? I think what this administration is doing is, this is my interpretation of what they've said and what they're actually doing, right? Every morning when you read the headlines, this is what they're actually doing. I think most of these people in this administration at the highest levels are so rich, they don't care anymore. They're not in it. And this may sound sycophantic, but I don't think these people are in it to, like, make money, you know?
I don't think so either. Absolutely. A lot of them are. You think Bessent cares? I don't think he cares about his portfolio.
I don't think these guys give a fuck.
Plus.
So what
you can position yourselves to make money off this. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Right? They're smart enough to where it doesn't matter. So I think what they're actually doing, and this comes at a shock to the more, like, you know, that maybe we're, like, you and I are maybe on the fringes of these circles, but, like, these sort of, you know, like, wealthy, liberal, anti-Trump, anti this entire, like, pro USAID kind of foreign policy type people. It comes at a shock to them because they can't imagine doing anything that would actually be detrimental to their own financial success, right? Like, this hasn't been, this entire episode has not been like, like, I haven't made a bunch of money on this entire thing.
I would say.
But that's why I'm, like, trying to analyze it. I'm just like, but.
No, based on what you just said, I agree, but I think what they're really shocked at is not that there's, even with those people, like, I think that there's a degree to which they will accept limits on their ability to grow their wealth. If they understand that the price is necessary to maintain stability of the system.
See, I think that's what they were trying to extend the system that made them wealthy.
Yeah.
They weren't at the point yet where they did not give a fuck anymore. And maybe in some parallel universe.
Yeah.
The Republicans, or, you know, the now Republicans,
mm-hmm.
would be on the other side of that. The Trumps, the Bessents, the Lutniks, the whoever. But they just happened to get there first. And then they used that political capital that got them elected to, now they're like, okay, we're flipping. we're flipping the system now.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I don't need any more money. What the fuck do I care? Yeah. Like, yeah, sure. I'll make more money if it's convenient, but now I think these guys are actually trying to not necessarily stop the system in its tracks, but reverse the trend of capital flows. And, you know, and this is where like the tariffs and all this stuff come in.
Mm-hmm.
They want to rebalance the system. And look, I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm not saying it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this is what I think they're doing. They just want to fucking throw a hand grenade into the system and then reconstruct it in such a way that more Americans will be on the receiving end of these capital flows. You know, whether it's through labor or import or, a better export balance of trade or whatever. And Trump is like the ultimate, like, he'll just do whatever it takes, right? Like, he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. I mean, he'll say whatever. He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He got shot in the face. So he's like, whatever. So we brought all these guys on, and they're going to say wild and crazy shit for like 1 year. They're going to say the wildest and craziest shit for 1 year. They don't give a fuck what happens to the capital markets. They know that if it gets so bad that the corporate credit system and the actual banking system gets to a point, the Fed will step in. But I don't honestly think that, like, Trump is not pressuring Powell that much to like cut rates or QE or whatever, right? He's just like saying things on Twitter like maybe once a week. He's like, oh, now would be a great time to cut rates or whatever. Like maybe a little help on the fucking 10-year, you know what I
think
mean?
I think people who are saying that this is all to put pressure on the Fed is they're totally missing. They're looking for an obvious.
They're missing it.
You know, sort of like. They're looking for an obvious sort of like market political economy explanation for it within the current framework of how things work. And it's not there. There isn't it's not in the typical flow of like, you know, we're doing this to put a little pressure to get a little rate cut here. And no, it goes way beyond that.
No. Yeah, exactly.
I do think this. I think that you're right. I think that the Trump and Besant and Lutnick and, you know, all the other big dicks in this MAGA movement, as well as I would actually put Elon on the outside of this. I don't think he's part of the inner circle. That
I think he's a distraction.
He's a distraction. Yeah. And they're pushing him out, clearly. I think that I think Trump and Besant, and so they truly believe that the nation, like the, you know, nation as in the American nation, not the state, but like the culture, the people,
the concept of America,
as a country, as a civilization, as a, you know, is under threat bought through this lack, the way that work, physical work, has been taken away. I do think in a way that China has posed such a threat to their vision of like civilizational masculinity because it took the work away, right? Like I really think that, and it's doubly threatening.
It's a bunch of
Chinese who did it, because in the white American mind, you know, the Chinese are
rice
sort of
farmers.
Like a, you know, they're kind of like a eunuch class.
Yeah, like rice farmers.
Yeah, like how yeah, you know, did you hear was it who kept saying oh, it was Vance. He kept saying like, do you understand that under the current system, like we are borrowing money from Chinese peasants so that we can afford to make what Chinese peasants sell to us? That's the system you all have created, and that's the system we're trying to fix.
That's Chinese peasants. That's the supra-colonial imbalance that has emerged in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? The supra-colonial imbalance, because now there is a rival supra-colonial center. Because this is all, it's all distributed. It's all decentralized.
I think that the liberals are, I mean, I think it's wrong, though, to think that that means China is public enemy number one. I think if you listen to what Trump has said, and I believe that Vance and others all share this belief, it's like, look, ultimately, the Chinese are just doing what's good for the Chinese. The problem is our leadership fucks us. The Chinese leadership actually cares about the Chinese people, whereas our leadership fucks the Americans, and they only care about themselves. And well, I do think, I honestly think that they genuinely believe this. Like, this is part of what motivates their policymaking.
Well, I think part of the yeah, you have to take them at their word when they speak into a camera.
Yeah,
because I think that's what they actually think.
That's what they think. Yeah, I think everyone who's trying to, quote, read behind the lines or between the lines and say, this is all a ploy for them to get the rates to drop. I'm like, no, it's not.
Well, the thing
is, maybe it is putting pressure on them to drop the rates, but that is not the whole point of this game.
The thing is, these guys, all of these guys at the upper echelons of the current administration, they're all business people, right? Business people at that level, when you're like doing firm to firm negotiations, dude, they don't fucking mince words, man. Like, I've met with, when I was running my company, I've met with CEOs that I was quote unquote partner firms with for doing like service delivery or something. They'll just tell you straight to your fucking face, why are you delaying this deal? I want this deal to go through. I don't fucking like the fact that you're doing this. I'm going to buy you a shot of tequila, and you need to tell me exactly what the fuck you want to get this deal. Like, you know, because like we were off doing some bullshit about like negotiating a 12-month versus an 18-month contract on this service, you know, on the service delivery or whatever. And the big boy CEO was just like, you need to tell me exactly what you want and how I can fucking get this done. Otherwise, I'm just going to fucking fire you. And, you know, like I don't get the feeling politicians work like that generally. So it's kind of like a shock to the system, right? Anyways, that's just my take on it. I don't know. But what you were saying, yeah. First of all, I think they're using, look, dude, these guys are worth anywhere from hundreds of millions to billions of dollars. I'm sure they've been to China at some point, mm-hmm. you know, like they've gone there and taken a look around.
Yeah.
Like they know what's going on.
No, but yeah, of course. And they've said a lot of smart things about China.
No, I mean, that whole thing where you were like, fundamentally, there's like kind of a shock to the Western mind that it's the fucking Chinese. They're obviously using that as a sales pitch to the rest of the country, the world, whatever, to get their agenda through.
Mm-hmm.
But they know at the end of the day, they're doing fucking business with the Chinese. Chinese have too much leverage. We need to fix this. We're going to do whatever it takes to fix this, basically. Right? Like that, you could distill it down into that, right? Like today, they were just like, yeah, we're open to all negotiations except with China.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though, is that I do think that they're biting off way more than they can chew. I think the idea of like intentionally underestimating your opponent is probably a bad strategy to go into a full-blown trade war. And
well, so here's my take on it, okay? I think that they think Xi Jinping is on creaky political ground.
Yeah, they do.
Right? They genuinely believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they think that China's economy is like wobbly and, you know, we could push him off.
We could push him
really off balance and they'll
off balance and take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah,
right?
Yep.
Like I don't think they have any illusions that they're going to like defeat China or whatever, you know, whatever the fuck that even means. If you've been to modern China, it's like, dude, nobody's defeating.
I don't think that they want to go to war. I don't really believe that. I know people have some differing opinions on that, but I don't think like a kinetic war with China is in the works. No way.
I think the far limit of what they will do, of what they're willing to do, and it may be like an asymptotic limit, right? Is a full-blown bilateral mutual trade sanction. Like, the end game, again, approach this limit asymptotically, as in you're never actually going to get there, but you can get closer and closer and closer, is a full-blown, straight-up bilateral trade, mutual trade sanction against each other.
You mean like an industrial great firewall?
Industrial-grade firewall.
Meaning there's going to be a non-Chinese supply chain, and there'll be a Chinese supply chain. Well, and if you're either one or the other.
In reality, what that means is there will be a huge global network of fucking sidestepping and gray areas
For sure. VPNs. countries acting as proxies.
Yeah. Entire continents acting as proxies.
Yeah.
So that's the ultimate. That's like, I think what they've done probably on both sides is they just sat down and they said, okay, that's as far as that's our actual limit. So we're going to escalate and escalate and escalate. And it doesn't matter. We're going to escalate, come back. You know, nothing goes in a straight line, right? But we all know, everyone who's involved, is that's the end state where there's a mutual firewall. And the amount of friction that will get done. It's almost like in the Soviet, I've heard of this anecdote. I don't know if it's true, but the Soviet Union was the only supplier of like high quality refined titanium in the world. And the CIA had to establish a global network of shell companies in order to purchase titanium to build US nuclear submarines. Like by the hundreds of tons at a time. And so they might be looking at something like that, because you know the entire US defense supply chain is dependent on China. Like everyone knows this. That's why the rare earths sanctions and all this stuff as a counter to the current American tariff threats are like, that's in play. So I think what they've said to themselves in the US, this administration, is okay. If we were able to purchase titanium from the Soviets and still win the Cold War, then that end setting is not so bad, especially since the Sinosphere is so large, and especially East Asia there's so much of it that's Eastern aligned or Western aligned that they can get materials from the East, and it won't be bad. As long as it remains a Cold War. And then economically, we can overpower them, i.e. the US overpowers the East, China, and their aligned nations. So basically, it sounds like what they want to do. What's that?
It's a silly idea, if they really believe that.
I don't know if it works or not. That's what I can only imagine.
So let me ask you. So we're at 33 minutes. In keeping with time, you want to move this to like a bonus? We'll conclude this in a bonus, as a bonus episode.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So to get access to the bonus pods, just support the podcast and et cetera, just go to patreon.com/planamag. And all right, we'll see you in the bonus.